So these two verses show how the meanings are understood. Now, by following the sound of speech through the process of ear consciousness, that shows one thought process. By following the sound of speech, that means when you hear a word, through the process of ear consciousness. So when you hear the word, let us say, dog, you hear the sound with the process of ear consciousness, or ear consciousness thought process arises. So with that ear consciousness, you hear the sound. Although the sound is the dog, at that moment, what you hear is just an audible object, not the word dog yet. It is just a sound that can be heard. And then by means of the concept conceived by the process in the mind door, that subsequently arises. But this shows another thought process. By means of the concept conceived by the process in the mind door. So there arises mind door thought process, taking the name as object. So at this stage, you hear the word dog. Then meanings are understood. That shows another thought process. So here, three thought processes are given. The first is ear consciousness thought process. You hear the sound with that thought process. And then mind-over thought process that follows. And with that mind-over thought process, you hear the name dog, or you take the name dog as object. And after the name comes, meanings comes. So you know the meaning of the word dog with another thought process. So here, three thought processes are given. So whenever you hear a word, like the word dog with one syllable, first there is the ear consciousness thought process, then mind or thought process, and then understanding the meaning, another mind or thought process. But our teacher said, or the sub-commentary said, that there is another thought process not shown here by name. And that is the thought process that takes the past sound as object. So there are four thought processes before you understand what that word means. First, there is the sound dog. So you hear the sound dog with the ear consciousness thought process. And then as soon as you have heard it, it disappears. But your mind takes the sound that has disappeared as object, and there is another thought process. And that thought process is through mind door and not ear door. The real sound you hear with the ear. But now the sound is gone. But you recall the sound actually. So when you recall the sound, it is already past. Since it is past, it does not come through ear consciousness thought process. It comes through mind door. And so it is mind door thought process which takes the past sound as object. So now you have two thought processes. And then another mind or thought process follows. And with that mind or thought process, you take the name concept as concept. That means now you hear the word dog. At the first thought process, what you hear is not the sound dog, but just the sound. something that can be heard. And the second thought process takes that sound as object. Now the third thought process takes the sound dark as object. After that, you know the meaning of the word dark. So that means with another thought process, you know the meaning. You know that a dog means a four-legged animal. What do you see here? A notion of the four-legged furry domestic animal and so on. So only after the fourth thought process do you know that it is a dog, it is an animal, like that. So we think that we understand the meaning of the words immediately we hear them, right? Now I'm talking to you and I'm saying words one by one, and you listen to the words and then you know the meaning of the words. So you think that you know the meaning of the word immediately after you hear it. But according to this statement, you need how many types of or how many kinds of thought processes? At least four, right? And each one of them may arise and disappear for many times, not just one time. The first thought process may arise and disappear many times, and then second thought process many times, third thought process many times, and fourth thought process many times. Only after these thought processes, maybe hundreds of thought processes arise and disappear, do you know the meaning of the word that dog means this animal, this being with four legs and so on. So it is very complicated actually. And this is just the word with one syllable. If there are two syllables in the word, you need two ear consciousness thought processes, you need two thought processes taking the pulse. Here, one more thought process is needed. That is, taking two as a whole, combining the two sounds as a whole. Let's say, woman, right? So first you hear the sound woo, and then you hear the sound man. So you hear the sound woo with one thought process, and then you hear the man with another thought process. And then with the third thought process, you combine these two into one unit, woman. So with two syllable words, you need one more thought process, three syllable words, another thought process, and so on. So if the word has four syllables or five syllables, how complicated this process of understanding will be, you can imagine. So even for one syllable word, we need how many kinds of thought processes? Four kinds of thought processes to understand the meaning. With two syllable words, maybe two, two, one, five, six, seven, about. So this is how we understand the meaning of the words. If we do not understand the meaning of the word, then the fourth thought process will not arise in us. Sometimes we hear the words, let's say English. English is not my mother tongue. So sometimes I hear an English word and I don't understand it. So if I don't understand it, if I don't understand it beforehand, then the last understanding thought process will not arise. I just hear the sound. I cannot connect that sound with the meaning that it represents. So only when you have known the meaning of the word before will the fourth thought process arise. Otherwise, it will not arise. The other day somebody asked me whether all five thought processes must go, or whether some people may stop with two or three thought processes. So if we do not understand the meaning of the word, there will be no understanding thought process. And it is said in our books that in order to understand the meaning of the word, you need two conditions. You must hear the word. So I must add distinctly. So you must hear the word distinctly. And then you must have known the meaning of the word beforehand. Only then do you understand the meaning of the word when it is uttered by somebody. That is why sometimes we don't understand, because we don't hear the word distinctly. And also, when it is your mother tongue, you can fill in for the word you do not really hear, because it is your mother tongue. Now, when we talk among ourselves, we do not talk articulately, actually. We blur, right? But we understand each other. Because we can fill in. But if it is in another language, like English for us, we cannot, because we are not able to fill the gaps, simply because it is not our mother tongue. So, in order to understand the meaning of the word, you must hear it distinctly. This is number one condition. And then you must have known the meaning of it before. Only then do you understand. So only then the fourth thought process or the fifth thought process will arise. So it is a very complicated process to understand the meaning of the words. And you think that you know the meaning immediately after you hear the word, right? So that means your mind works so very fast that even though there are hundreds of thought processes going on, until you know the meaning of the word, you don't seem to be going through them, because your mind works so fast. Now, as you know, there can be billions of thought moments in a second. And so when you hear the word dog, it may be about half of a second. So during that time, many thought moments can come and go. And so there are many thought processes you have to go through before you know the word. And these concepts should be understood as fashioned by worldly convention. Now that means people have agreed to call, say, the four-legged animal described as furry and so on, as a dog. So when they have agreed that let us call it a dog, then everybody accepts it, then it becomes a dog. Then later, when we hear the word dog, we understand it. So that is actually the worldly convention, or it is created by convention of people. We don't know why this animal is called a dog. It might as well be called by another name. So if they decided, if the people at the beginning of the world decided that, oh, let us call it not a dog but by some other name, then we will be calling that animal with another name. So these are just sounds or names to represent the things. And what we call a person, a man or a woman, a house, a cart and so on, are all concepts, because they are not ultimate realities. The ultimate reality is just the mind and matter for living beings, and just matter for non-living things. So in the ultimate analysis, we cannot find a man or a woman or whatever, but only mind and matter or the five aggregates. Now, even mind or matter is a concept. The name mind or matter is a concept, but its meaning is real. Now, there is a difference. With regard to the unreal, according to ultimate reality, there can be name concept and thing concept. But with regard to ultimate realities, there is only a name concept but not thing concept, but thing that is real. So let us say feeling. The word feeling is a name concept. But feeling is an ultimate reality, and so the feeling is not a thing concept or meaning concept, but it is an ultimate reality. It is not a concept. But with things that are not ultimate reality, we can have these two things, name concept and meaning concept. Similarly, when seeing something, although it is not mentioned here, when we see something, first we see the visible object, and then we see the past visible object with mind or thought process. And then there is the stage of synthesis. They collect the different parts of the thing together and as a whole. And then we see the concept. And then we get the name of that concept. So here, the name concept, thought process, and meaning concept thought process are reversed. When you hear a word, name concept comes first and then meaning concepts later. But when you see something, meaning concepts comes first and then name concepts come later. You see a man. First you see the visible object in that man, not yet man at that moment. And then with another mind or thought process, you take the past visible object as object. And then you take the combination of all these parts in the body and you take as a whole. And then you see the man as a concept. And then the word man comes to you. So name concept comes last. And that name concept will come to you only when you know the name of that thing. Sometimes we see things and we don't know the name of the thing, then that name concept will, thought process will not arise in us. Just as when we don't know the meaning, that there can be no understanding of the word. So seeing, hearing and all other activities, although they seem to be very simple, when viewed from the viewpoint of Abhidhamma, they are very complex experiences. So complex that we cannot explain them fully, actually. You know, what I have presented to you is not a full picture. It is just a simplified picture of what hearing or seeing is. Our teachers have told us that there are many more thought processes involved in this. You already know the meaning of the word, and then you connect this meaning to the object now you are seeing, and there is a connecting thought process also, and then you come to the decisions that this is it, and then decision thought process also, and so there are many thought processes, but they are too much for us, and so we should satisfied with just what is mentioned here and just a little more. So in these two verses, only three thought processes are given, but the sub-commentary adds one more thought process, and so there are four thought processes here when you hear something. And similarly, when you see something, there are four thought processes following the seeing thought process. So when I say you see a man with your mind, you don't see the man with your eyes, what would you say? Now you are seeing me and I am seeing you, right? So do I see you with my eyes or with my mind? Actually with my mind. What I see you is the visible object in you, the visible data. And then in my mind, I collect all the visible data into a shape of a man and say, I think I see a man. So actually, what we see is really misleading. So we see with our minds and not with our eyes. So what we see with our eyes is the visible object. What we hear with our ears is the audible object. Now when you listen to a song, a music, beautiful music you like, it, but what you hear with your ear is just a sound, just audible object, not the sound, tone or melody of the sound. Then you combine these sounds in your mind into a series, and then you say, this is a good song, and beautiful, I like it, or something like that. So the activities that seem to be very simple are really very complex, and it is very difficult to understand or to know these processes going on in our mind. And it was the super wisdom of the Buddha that discovered all these and then taught them to the world. And so following the teachings of the Buddha and following the teachings of our elders, we understand a little. But this just little, we are proud of ourselves. So now we come to the end of the 8th chapter, the chapter on conditionality. And this chapter is divided into two parts, dependent origination and the patthana, the modes of relationship. And at the end, the section on the panyati or concepts is given. Now, with nibbana, there is one thing I did not explain when we were in the 7th chapter. Nibbana is outside the aggregates. Nibbana is not among the aggregates. If you want to read the book, please go to 290. As Nibbana lacks differentiation, such as past, present, future, etc., so there should be etc., it is excluded from the category of aggregates. So Nibbana is not among the aggregates. Nibbana is outside the aggregates. So Nibbana is not rupa aggregate, not vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana aggregate. It is different from or separate from aggregate. Why is Nibbana not included in the category of aggregates? Because Nibbana lacks differentiation. Nibbana lacks division into past, present, future, internal, external, gross, subtle, far, near, and so on. So Nibbana is not present, not past, not future. It is called timeless. So there is no time in Nibbana. And Nibbana is always external. There is no internal Nibbana. So it cannot be divided into two, external Nibbana and internal Nibbana. Nibbana is always external. And Nibbana is always subtle and never gross. Nibbana is always far and never near. Since Nibbana lacks this division into past, present, future, and so on, it is not included in the category of aggregates. So we include in the category of aggregates only those that have this division into past, present, future, and so on. So that one thing I did not explain during the 7th chapter. So now we come to the end of the 8th chapter, and I think we can go a little into 9th chapter. So the 9th chapter is a chapter on meditation. In Pali it is called Kammatthana Sangaha. So the authors said that he will explain in order the two types of meditation subjects for the respective development of calm and insight. So first, we must understand the term kammatthana. Kamma means work. Now here kamma does not mean kamma. Kamma means work, and thana means place. So kammatthana means workplace, a place for work. And work here means meditation. And there are two kinds of meditation taught in Buddhism: calm and insight, or in Pali, samatha and vipassana. And of the two, the development of insight is the distinctively Buddhistic form of meditation. That means vipassana is taught only in Buddhism. So you can find vipassana only in Buddhism and in no other teachings. This system of meditation is unique to the Buddha's teaching and is intended to generate direct personal realization of the truths discovered and enunciated by the Buddha. Now, vipassana meditation is not common to other teachings, and it helps you to penetrate into the nature of things. It helps you to see the true nature of things. It helps you to see that mind and matter are impermanent, they are suffering, and they are non-soul. And then that will lead you ultimately to the attainment of enlightenment. The development of calm is also found in non-Buddhist schools of meditation. Calm meditation or samatha meditation is taught in other religions also. So samatha meditation is not taught in Buddhism only, but it is taught in other teachings as well. But in Buddhism, samatha meditation is for vipassana meditation. Now, Buddha meant samatha meditation to be a basis for vipassana meditation. So Buddha taught samatha meditation not just for samatha's sake. Actually, Buddha wants his disciples to practice samatha meditation so that they can base the vipassana meditation on what they gained through samatha meditation. So according to the Buddha's wishes, samatha meditation must always lead to vipassana meditation. Now, the word samatha means quietness or calmness, quietness of mind or calmness of mind. And it is synonymous with the word samadhi. In some discourses, the word samatha means just samadhi, and not in its technical sense as a distinct method of meditation. So samatha can mean a distinct method of meditation called calm meditation, and also it can mean just concentration, samadhi. And samatha meditation can lead to the attainment of jhanas and also of abhinyas. Abhinyas are a special form of jhanas. But through the attainment of abhinya, one can remember one's past lives, one can know the mind of others, one can see beings dying from one life and being reborn in another. One can hear sounds far away, or one can perform miracles like flying through the air or walking on the water and so on. So samatha meditation by itself cannot lead to attainment of enlightenment. It can lead to the attainment of jhanas and abhinyas only. That is why for the disciples of the Buddha, whose aim is to get out of suffering, samatha is not sufficient, samatha is not enough. So even if one practices samatha, one must ultimately practice vipassana meditation. So vipassana meditation can lead us to understand the true nature of things, and ultimately it leads to attainment of enlightenment or the cessation of all suffering. Now the word vipassana is made up of two parts, vi and passana. So vi means many, or many ways, or in different ways, and passana means seeing. So vipassana means seeing in many ways, seeing in different ways. And seeing in different ways means seeing the mind and matter, or the five aggregates, in terms of the three characteristics, namely impermanence, suffering, and non-self. So the function of vipassana is seeing the three characteristics, seeing the mental and material phenomena as impermanent, suffering, and non-self. And this, seeing the three characteristics, will lead a yogi to the attainment of enlightenment. The attainment of enlightenment is the outcome or the result of the practice of vipassana meditation. And both samatha meditation and vipassana meditation are explained in the book called Visuddhimagga. So if you want to understand meditation in all its aspects, Visuddhimagga is the book to read. And this chapter, the ninth chapter, is like a summary to the entire Visuddhimagga. So this is the brief form of Visuddhimagga, but it is very, very brief. This chapter contains maybe about 5 or 6 pages. But Visuddhimagga, in its English translation, more than 800 pages. And the translation is not so easy to understand because of the language as well as the subject matter. Visuddhimagga is a book written by a monk for monks. So he took for granted that his readers already understand Abhidhamma. Many Abhidhamma topics are mentioned, but they will not be explained in detail. So you can test your knowledge of Abhidhamma by picking up Visuddhimagga and read one passage. Now you will understand more. Now, if you have read Visuddhimagga before, please pick it up again and read the same passage that you thought you did not understand. So after you have gained a knowledge of Abhidhamma, you will understand more of Visuddhimagga. So Visuddhimagga is actually a handbook for meditating monks. But I say meditating monks because it is written in Pali language, and so it is for monks. But since now it is in English translation, and also it translation in other languages, it can be read by both monks and laypersons. So now we begin with the samatha meditation. So samatha meditation here is explained in 7 sections. So the first one is 10 kasinas, and then number 2, 10 kinds of foulness, number 3, 10 recollections, number 4, 4 illimitables, 5 one perception, 6 one analysis, and 7 four material states. So these are the subjects of Samatha meditation. If you add them all up, 10 plus 10 plus 10 plus 4, 1, 1, 4, how many do you get? 40. So we say there are 40 subjects of Samatha meditation. So you can practice any one of them. You have a choice here. And these 7 categories will be explained in a little detail. And then there are what are called temperaments. We should understand temperament so that we can choose a subject of meditation that is most suitable for our temperament. Temperament means personal nature, the character of a person as revealed by his or her natural attitudes and conduct. So we can guess a person's temperament by his conduct, by his behavior, by his way of doing things, and by his way of talking, and so on. And temperaments of people differ owing to the diversity of their past karmas. So depending on their past karmas, people who are born here may have temperament of lust or temperament of ill will or anger, and so on. So there are said to be 6 temperaments, and they are: number 1, the lustful temperament, or lust or loba attachment; number 2, hateful temperament. Now you may have met persons who get angry very easily, so those persons have the hateful temperament. And then the deluded temperament, a dull person, and he cannot come to conclusion either one way or the other, something like that. And the 4th is the faithful, a person who has much faith, is called, has the temperament of faith. And number 5 is the intellectual. That means he is bright, smart, and possess knowledge. And 6, the discursive thinking. So these are the 6 temperaments. And people have these temperaments. Actually, it is very difficult to say what temperament a person has. Even I don't know what temperament I have. And then, later on, the author will tell us what subject of Samatha meditation is suitable for people of what temperament. Now, the next category is development, that is the work of meditation. So there are 3 stages of mental development: preliminary development, access development, and absorption development. So preliminary meditation occurs from the time one begins the practice of meditation up to the time the 5 hindrances are suppressed and the counterpart sign emerges. Now, you may not know counterpart sign yet, but later that you will understand. So preliminary development is the development until sometime when the 5 hindrances are suppressed. That means when your mind can be on the object of meditation and your mind is not tormented by what are called the 5 hindrances: sensual desire, ill will, and so on. You know the 5 hindrances. And then access development occurs when the 5 hindrances become suppressed and the counterpart sign emerges. Signs will be given later. It endures from the moment the counterpart sign arises up to the change of lineage chaita in the cognitive process culminating in jhana. The chitta that immediately follows change of lineage is called absorption. This marks the beginning of absorption development, which occurs at the level of the fine material sphere jhanas or the immaterial sphere jhanas. So there are three stages of development: preliminary development, and then excess development or neighborhood development, and the absorption development. And then there are three signs. Three signs are preliminary sign, the learning sign, and the counterpart sign. This may mean not much to you right now, but please try to remember these signs. The preliminary sign is the original object of concentration used during the preliminary stage of practice. So in the beginning, you use one object as the object of meditation, and during the preliminary stage, the sign is also called preliminary sign. The learning sign is a mental replica of the object perceived in the mind exactly as it appears to the physical eyes. Now, when you practice casino meditation, first you look at the casino, the disc, and then you actually memorize the disc, looking at it, and then closing your eyes, again looking, closing, and so on. In this way, you memorize the disc, and when you have memorized and you can see the disc in your mind without looking at the disc, then you are said to have gained the learning sign. And then you dwell on that learning sign again and again, and it changes into what is called the counterpart sign. So counterpart sign is much better than the learning sign. So these are the signs a yogi will experience or encounter in his practice of meditation. And then 40 subjects of kamathan meditation in detail. Now there are 10 kasinas, and they are at kasina, water kasina, fire kasina, air kasina, blue kasina, yellow kasina, red kasina, the white kasina, the space kasina, and the light kasina. Now, what is kasina? Kasina means whole or total, all. That means you look at the kasina is mostly in the form of a disc. So when you look at the disc and memorize the disc, your mind should take the whole of the disc, not just part of the disc. So that is why it is called kasina. The totality of the disc you take as object. And there are 10 kinds of kasinas. The first one is earth kasina, that you have to make. If you want to practice earth kasina, first you have to make that kasina. You find the clay with the color of dawn, that means some red clay. First you need to have a frame, and then there should be a piece of cloth or canvas on it, and then you put the earth on the cloth in a circle about maybe 10 inches in diameter. And after making it, you put it in front of yourself and then look at it and practice meditation, saying earth, 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 thousands and thousands of times. That is, you are memorizing that earth disk. If you want to develop water kasina, then you can take a vessel full of clear water and then contemplate on it as water, 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 and so on. Then fire kasina, you look at fire and view it through a hole in the piece of leather or a piece of cloth and saying fire, 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 fire. And if you want to practice air kasina, then you concentrate on the wind that enters through a window or an opening in the wall, saying air, air, air. And then there are kala kasinas. You make a disc of these four colors. The first one is blue, second yellow, red, white. So you may take a piece of cloth or something, or a card, and then you draw a circle. And if it is to be blue kasina, then you color it blue. If it is to be yellow kasina, you color it yellow. Red, you color it red, and white, you just leave it. And then you keep your mind totally on the disc and say blue, 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 yellow, 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 and so on. Now, the word blue, or nila in Pali, is translated in our country as brown. But outside our country, it is translated as blue. Now, the color of hair is said to be nila. So, color of hair is not blue. It may be black or brown or something like that. But there is one lotus called blue lotus, and the color is really blue. So in Pali it is called nila upla, blue lotus. So blue may be also correct. And what color do you see on the Buddhist flag? The first color is blue, right? Yeah. So whether it is blue or brown, it doesn't matter. But what is important is you make that color disc, and then you keep your mind totally on that disc and say blue, 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 yellow, 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 and so on. And then light kasina may be developed by concentrating on the moon or on an unflickering lamp light. So it is more practical to take the unflickering lamp light than the moon, because you cannot get to see the moon every night. Or on a circle of light cast on the ground, or on a beam of sunlight or moonlight entering through a wall crevice or hole and cast on a wall. And the space kasina you develop by concentrating on a hole about 30 centimeters in diameter. How big is the 30 centimeter? About a foot. Yeah. But you need not be exact and contemplating on it, space, 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 and so on. So these are called kasina. Meditation on them is called kasina meditation. So you can choose any one of the kasinas from these 10 kasinas: earth kasina, water kasina, and so on. The next is foulness meditation, or foulness subjects. And they are actually the different stages of a dead body. 10 kinds of foulness are a bloated corpse. So after 3 or 4 days, a corpse becomes bloated, and then livid corpse, a festering corpse, a dismembered corpse, an eaten corpse, and a scattered in pieces corpse, a mutilated and scattered in pieces corpse, a bloody corpse, a worm infested corpse, and a skeleton. You don't want to see any of them. Huh? And nowadays it is very difficult to practice this foulness meditation, because you do not get to see a bloated corpse like and others anywhere. Even in the cemeteries you don't see a bloated corpse now. Cemeteries are so made that it's like a park. So I always say you don't get the notion of foulness even if you go to a cemetery nowadays. So they are made to look pleasant and good places to visit. But in the days of the Buddha, in the olden days, the cemeteries are really foul places. and people are afraid to go to the cemeteries, and the dead bodies are just left at the cemetery for the jackals and others to eat. So there may be burying also, and also just leaving the dead body in the cemetery. So in those days, all of these can be viewed at some of the cemeteries, but it is very difficult to get those nowadays. But if you want to, you can get a picture of some of them and practice this meditation on it. This meditation is a powerful meditation for removing sensual lust. If you have too much attachment to your body or to the body of another person, practice this foulness meditation. And in the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, this meditation is not just look at the bloated corpse and so on and saying they are foul, but also applying that nature of foulness to your own living body. Just as this dead body is foul, is disgusting, so is my living body, and so on. So by practicing this meditation, you can remove sensual lust, you can remove attachment to your body, and so on. And then the recollections. These are very pleasant subjects of meditation, and many of you have been practicing this. Buddha anusati, the recollection of the Buddha. Recollection of the Buddha means recollection of the attributes or virtues of the Buddha. Recollection of the good qualities of the Buddha. And recollection of the Dhamma means, again, recollection of the virtues of Dhamma, and recollection of the Sangha, the same thing. Recollection of morality, that means you keep your sila pure, and then you recollect on your purity of sila. I have kept my sila pure, and it is not broken in any place, it is not torn, something like that. So keeping the moral precepts pure and then recollecting on it, you gain happiness. And then recollection of generosity, that you do some generous act, say dana and so on, and then you recollect on it and be happy. Recollection of the devas mean actually recollection of yourself. The deities are born in such exalted states on account of their faith, morality, learning, generosity, and wisdom. I too possess these same qualities. So actually you concentrate on your own qualities, but making the qualities of the deities as an example. So this is one of the mindfulness meditation, but you recollect or you think of your qualities like morality, learning, generosity, and wisdom with the deva standing as witness. That means taking devas as example. And then recollection of peace means contemplation on the peaceful attributes of Nibbana. You are not seeing Nibbana direct, but you are recollecting on the peacefulness of Nibbana. Nibbana is good, Nibbana is peaceful, something like that. And then recollection of death is also a powerful meditation. Contemplation of the fact that one's own death is absolutely certain, that the arrival of death is utterly uncertain. So we know that death is certain, death will come, but we do not know when it will come. And that when death comes, one must relinquish everything. So when death comes, we'll have to leave everything behind. We cannot take anything with us. And so the fact that death is certain and death will come to us, we recollect that way. Now, recollection of death can make us not afraid of death. It is very strange. Thinking of death will make you not afraid of death, because say death will come, and so you become familiar with death, and so you are no longer afraid of death. So if you are afraid of death, try the practice of this meditation, recollection of death. And then mindfulness occupied with the body is taking the 32 parts in the body and see them as repulsive, see them as loathsome. Now there are 32 parts, like hairs of the head, hairs of the body, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, marrows, and so on. Now these 32 parts are taught for practice of meditation and not for anatomical lessons. So they may not correspond with what is taught in anatomy, but still the purpose here is to get rid of attachment to one's body by seeing them as filthy and so on. Now hairs of the head are filthy, so this is very evident. Hairs of the body are filthy, nails, teeth and skin, because when they are on our bodies, we think that they are beautiful. We don't think them as filthy. But once they are removed from our bodies, then they become filthy. Now, if there is a hair in your meal, you would throw the whole meal away. And then mindfulness of breathing, it is very familiar to many people. It is the concentrating on the breathing in and out, keeping your mind at the tip of the nose or at the entrance of the nostrils or on your upper lip. And you may feel a sensation there and you can concentrate on that sensation also. So that is a mindfulness of breathing meditation. So these are the 10 recollection meditations. So recollection of Buddha's attributes and so on. Okay. Mitta and others will do tomorrow. Now some questions here. What are the things we should be mindful when we do chanting for it to be effective and proper? Now when we chant, it is said that we must chant it correctly and we must know the meaning of what we chant. These are the requirements on the part of those who do the chanting. First, learn the chanting correctly and then understand the meaning of the chant, and then have loving kindness and compassion for all beings. Are thoughts objects or consciousness? Thoughts are objects and thoughts are consciousness both. So one consciousness can be the object of another consciousness. And what we call thoughts are the combination of consciousnesses. So it is both object and consciousness. Is awareness of thoughts part of the practice of Vipassana? Yes. As everything happens due to their respective causes, how significant are dreams? Can dreams help in our spiritual development? In Buddhism, there is not much saying about dreams, although the dreams are said to be experienced by people in different ways. I have read that some highly developed yogis can cause some people to make certain decisions in a particular way, that is, they are able to manipulate other people's thought processes. If this is true, how can this be explained? I'm not sure that one person can manipulate the other person's thought process. But there is what is called hypnotism, and it is something like manipulating the other people's thought process. So it may be possible. If this is true, how can this be explained? By his maybe mental power, but hypnotist uses a suggestion. So by his suggestion, the other person actually hypnotized himself. Not that the hypnotist hypnotized the other person. So he just gives suggestions and the person hypnotized himself. So, I think by the power of samadhi, it may be possible to influence other people's thoughts. But I'm not sure about this. This is a question from yesterday. How can we teach Dhamma to these two groups of people? Is there any skillful means by which we can use to lead them to the path of Dhamma? These two groups are people who have little interest in listening to Dhamma. Two people who have no interest at all in Dhamma. These two groups have something in common. They would not want to attend any Dhamma classes, Dhamma talks, and read Dhamma books. It would be difficult to force another person to what you want to do. Only by suggestions can you persuade another person to want to do something. Instead of giving him the book and saying to him, read it, you may talk to him like you read a book and it is good and it helps you in some of your problems and so on. And then maybe put a suggestion, if you want to read, you can borrow it from me or something like that. So the practice of meditation is also like that. If you tell a person point blank, practice meditation, come with us to practice meditation, then he may not want to practice because there's a resistance in him. But if you persuade him subtly, he might get interested in it. So not by forcing them, but by giving hints to them or suggesting them and persuasively talking to them, you may be able to bring them to attend the Dhamma courses and Dhamma talks and read Dhamma books. I've been practicing Samatha meditation for about 3 years. How come I am easily agitated? Is there any problem with my practice? That means because you do not get real good concentration. So, you practice Samatha meditation, and if you get real good concentration, your mind will become calm, because it is called calm meditation. Then when you are calm, you will not be easily agitated. So make more effort to gain a better concentration than you already have. I think it can help you to keep yourself more calmed. Okay, thank you.